one more tea. I'm gonna drop this tea real quick.
Okay, for the tea. Make sure you close to the mic. Make sure so we can get it
bring
on.
It, yeah, bring it.
Bring it in.
Let me get this on the airwaves. Sound speed?
Hey.
Action.
Welcome to a podcast about nothing with V
and AD. Ooh, I like the props.
I know.
We need one of those.
We do.
What is it called?
It's your marker.
Oh, yeah, we need markers.
Oh, we should. Yeah, we definitely need one of those because right now we clap.
Oh, yeah. I like that better, though.
She never claps right.
Are you kidding me? I have rhythm. That was pretty
good. So. Okay.
How y'all been?
Okay, we have a guest. how should we, if you were in the military, how do people address you? If you were...
I got out as a corporal, so just Corporal Gray.
Oh, Corporal
Gray.
Right, that's a ring to it, though, right?
I know. It sounds nice. Like Dr. Gray.
Like Dr. Gray, Corporal Gray. I feel like it's in that realm of the greats.
No, definitely. I love that. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. Today we're going to tackle all things military / military Marines, and just kind of like your experience overall in the military. And yeah, let's get into it. First, introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you.
I am Timothy Tallway Gray, family right here, sister-in-law and cousin.
Hey!
So it's great to finally be on the show. I've listened to so many of your episodes, so many deep conversations during COVID. I'm glad you came back to bring the show back. We needed to laugh. We need to talk about things.
Thanks.
What you had to say was important. So you're seen and you're heard, and to have these two strong Black presence taking over the airwaves is amazing. So I'm proud of both of you.
Ooh, I want to save that intro. I like that.
We Black and we proud. Save that. Yeah, well, dope. Thanks so much for being on the show. We've talked about this for probably over a year now, and we were hoping that we could really do it in person. But unfortunately, we can't. So, you know, hey, we're here and we're doing it.
I love it. It's a weird time, but I'm just glad everybody's been safe.
Amen.
Okay, we'll get down there to get the show done. We'll have a lot of fun, and we're going to sip some drinks and talk. Dance.
I'm with you.
Hey.
First and foremost, how are you doing? This has been a very long year for the most of us.
Yeah.
Very difficult year. So how have you been holding up?
I appreciate you asking. It was the first month of COVID was rough. It was rough.
I believe it.
It felt like, all right, this is going to be over soon. And then it didn't end.
Yeah.
Worse. And then it's like, all right, well, this is not over soon, but it hasn't affected anyone that I know. And then people that you know started to affect. And then they're like, all right, well, it's starting to hit home now. This is real. It's not going anywhere. You begin to meet your family, your natural routines. Just seeing kids just walk to the bus stop in masks because Florida.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking. So I fell into this deep, deep, dark depression. For that like second, third month of COVID. And then I was getting ready to graduate from film school, like 2 months out. We're going to go to LA, do a showcase. We've been working so hard on our thesis and films, getting my bachelor's in acting for film and television at South Beach, New York Film Academy.
Hey, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, we ended up graduating via Zoom. We didn't go to LA. I had this degree in this field where you gotta be places to do stuff. And up until then, I was filming a lot and I was ready to get into the industry. And I had to really look in the mirror and change who I was. Like, it was just that time where, you know, you just wake up and you look at yourself for a long time and you're like, all right, I can either quit and run the other way and go back and find something military related to do. Or I feel like this is my craft and my calling. I finally found something I love doing. I found something I think I'm good at. So I started writing. I started writing almost a script a day about my life in the military, stories that came to me from experiences, things that I wanted to see happen in the world. And I kind of had this conversation with God. You know, people say I talk to, you know, God told me. I believe he shows you stuff. So he kind of showed me, just be still and keep working on your craft. So I just started grabbing book after book from acting and all these different things that I could to help me elevate myself. So when it ended, I could just break into the industry. Long story short, my partner, Tyler, who we've been dating for 6 years, our tub started leaking. And so I called my landlord and we'd never really spoken via phone, only email. And out of the blue, she's like, you have amazing energy. Like, what do you do? And I said, I'm an actor. She goes, oh, I work for NBC Universal in front of all talent, inclusion, and diversity. So we're looking for young black men and women to be in front of the camera. And it was just like, what? How many chances? And so she connected me with other people at NBC, and she was like, you know, we had a conversation about all this police brutality and the death of black men, and we felt like, as Brazilian black women, what can we do to change that narrative? And then I call about a leaking tub and I show her my reel and she's like, this is great. And I just started working from there. I mean, like NBC, Paramount Pictures, doing film after film. I was on the road for about 6 months, Tampa, New York, all over the place, South Carolina, just filming films and major projects that I would never get the chance to be on. And once I got there and started to work, be professional, kind on set, know my lines, everything God needed me to be still and do and learn, it was like I had been doing it forever. And so, it, you know, not to say COVID helped out, but the good news was, is I can do my virtual readings like this. I can audition like this. Somebody goes, hey, that kid in that movie you were in, can you do a Zoom audition? And like, just like that, I wake up and audition like that, and then I get the role. Or any other time, I'd have to fly out, see a casting director, walk into the room with a bunch of other people that
blessing
was just
in
like
disguise.
That's it, you know, and like it just was all a blessing. And so it's been like that. And then I after this 6-7 month relationship, you know, with this amazing casting director and the head of NBC Inclusion and Talent, I was like, hey guys, I have like 45 scripts I'm sitting on, and they're just like, let's make them happen. We wanna show
this. Wow.
So yeah, that's how COVID went, you know, and
that's a great story.
Yeah.
I thank God for it.
Shout out to the leaky tub.
Right. Right. Shout out to the leaky tub.
To the leaky tub. I know. And it's, again, brand new apartment. And she was so busy. And then when she emailed me, she'd always use her regular email. But then after I found out what she did, I'm starting to get her name. I'm looking her up. She worked for 30 Rock. She founded, I mean, Vin Diesel, Channing Tatum. Like she is.
Oh, that's why you be working out like that.
I've been working out
and posting them pictures.
I compete with The Rock looking like a pebble, so I gotta put them on the bones.
That's so dope.
That is really, really dope. So take us to the beginning. So first of all, let's talk about this. What is your name? Because who is Timothy? I have never known Timothy in my life.
I know. Okay, so it's crazy. So Tawei. My birth name, Tawei Timothy Gray, is my full name. But my mother said when she had me, and I think I told you the story before. You might have told it to you. We both had a 50% chance of living because the umbilical cord was wrapped around my neck.
What were y'all doing in there?
I know, right? I know. No,
being mom, hyper.
She was in London when it happened, so she had a really good doctors, but she wasn't sure what to do. And she said she fell asleep and she had this dream that the Bible just fell. They had no name for me yet. I think it was just going to be Tawei. And the Bible fell onto Timothy. And right there and then, she just woke up and was like, this child is blessed by God. We're going to both make it. And if he does, I'm going to name him Timothy. And we did. And so that's always her little homage to me to say, like, you remember that if you ever read the Bible, Timothy used to persecute the Christians, and then you ended up saving them. And so he had an amazing story, incredible life. And I feel like, that's me. At some point during that time of stillness, I felt this connection with God, and he was telling me, like, I'm going to use you, kid. I'm going to use you.
That's dope.
That is.
That's dope. So, okay, so Tawei is who?
Tawei is my dad's brother that passed away.
Hmm.
So, you know, it was always, whenever I'd see the family, you look just like your Uncle Tawei. You bite your nails like Uncle Tawei, you know? And so I still hold that close as my middle name, but I think Timothy's wife is like me being born again and trying to ask for fame or fortune, but make a change the world. change the world. Like, that's my only MO right now, is to change
the world. I love that.
That is dope.
That is. Dang. Okay, fine. I will call you Timothy from now on. Because I always.
You got it. Look at you trying to play games. Who is Timmy?
Because I always feel like the character from Coming to America.
Yeah.
He's like, his mama named him.
His mama named Cassius.
I'm gonna call him Cassius.
I was at Tyler's, visiting the family not too long ago, and I think at one point his mom was just like, "How many names do you have?"
Oh, she called you Spanish.
Yeah, that's it. She called me out. I was like, "Just call me."
Oh, that's dope. Okay, so
at least there's meaning behind it. I like that.
I love that because we're not going to even talk about it. Okay, so
and to be honest with you, I think Tallway, as you know, both you know, Tallway was a little bit reckless. I think there's a lot associated with Tallway, but I'm always proud of my African roots as a Liberian man. I will keep Tallway close to my heart, and anyone that's called me Tallway growing up. I respond to it, but I think Timothy's on another mission. Timothy's on a real mission.
I respect that.
I do too.
I respect that.
I love it. I love it. So, all right. So, Tawe was this reckless young kid who did ridiculous things and then told fibs about all the things that he did.
I think the first time I met you, I think I was in trouble. I think I ran away from home or something. And
where were you going? Oh, I've never spoken to a runaway. Where do you guys go when you run away from home?
White people's house.
Facts, because they don't check shit. They don't check nothing. Actually, she said I could stay here for the whole month. Right. Okay, great. Welcome.
One good white friend to be mad at your parents with you. He got your back.
Facts.
Dang, I missed out.
You need some white friends. So Tawe was this kid who ran around, did reckless things. And then not too long ago. So were you Tawe in the military?
No, I think that person was Corporal Bray. I think I was growing in the military. I kind of ceased all that stupidness because you got to grow fast. Like, now you're dealing with lives on the line and training younger Marines and then taking them to war. And then, I'd gone into the infantry, which is, you just said how reckless Tawe was. I didn't tell my mom I was leaving for boot camp until the day I was going to leave.
So what was that decision like for you? Somebody who is so young, reckless, carefree, I'm going to do what I want, to turn around and make the decision to go into the military, because you usually don't hear that. You don't hear the people. Well, people do make the decision. Like my dad, I feel like he was reckless in school and chose it, but his motive was based off of proving people wrong. It wasn't necessarily for him. So what was the decision and motive for you?
I think it was along those lines, mixed with 9/11, because eighth grade, I remember exactly where I was. I was in my history class with Ms. Abbott. And she came in. She's the sweetest teacher in the world. And I've never had anyone care about me in the school system besides her and my mom, really. Everyone else was like, it's Tawe, he's bad, he acts up, kick him out. She just never gave up on me. And so when she came in crying that day, I was like, oh, mom. She was like, I don't think I can tell you right now. And then, beep, so-and-so comes to the office. Like, people whose parents are working at the Pentagon.
Yeah.
Getting picked up. Kids that I knew had parents that were in the Pentagon that day, and it was like my Uncle Bob, my dad's brother was visiting him and his wife and daughter were going to fly out that day. And I got back, I saw my parents a mess, I was a mess, and I wanted to know who did this. I'd never seen anything like that, and I was old enough to realize what a terrorist attack was. And so, I knew that my dad had served, my grandfathers had served. It just kind of made sense to me at that point.
Like, and you were in eighth grade with this realization.
Yeah, absolutely. I knew. I would tell my mom and I would tell Granny all the time, I'm going to the military. I didn't know the Marines at first, but I knew I was going to go to the military. And it's funny because an Army recruiter came to pick me up and my dad cursed him out. out of the house, right? And this guy was like, and I was getting ready to sign up. And so I didn't get in there. My parents asked me to wait a little bit. So I tried the Air Force. And the Air Force was like, bro, you ain't that smart. You ain't that smart. You need a high ASVAB. And so at the time, I was a camp director teaching kids. And one of my kindergartners who loved me a lot, her dad was a Marine recruiter. And he came in looking sharp and spiffy. And I said, man, I want to join the Marines. And he goes, we don't need you. The Marines don't need you. But if you want to join, be in my office tomorrow at 7 a.m. Mm. Like that just rubbed me the wrong way. Like, what you mean they don't need me?
Right. They need me. Show up. See what you're talking about.
The Army's knocking on my door every day. Like, once you sign out that first form, they all start calling you.
Yep.
And I walked into his office, and he asked me why I wanted to join. I told him, and he said, then you want to join the infantry. And that was it. I signed a dotted line, and I was so scared to tell my parents. So the recruiter took me to my mom's school, and I feel so bad about this, but she loved me. And she sees him, and she's like, what's going on? And I'm like, Mom, I'm going to the Marines. And she's like, what? When? And I go, tomorrow. And she goes, what is your job? And I go, infantry. And she just fell into my arms. And I just remember holding her, and she was so weak she couldn't stand. And I said, Mom, I promise you, I'll be okay. And she goes, no, you're going to be back. You're going to come back. And so that night, the recruiter drove me to Baltimore to the MEF Center so I can leave from Baltimore to Paris Island. And because my name change wasn't official on my Social Security card, they wouldn't let me leave. And like my mom said, I was back. So I got to get that last week with them, hug her, talk about it, and pray. Mm. And I, at some point, God showed her, like, I got him. He's protected. He's covered. He's going to be fine. And so I think she came down at like 11:45 and said, you really want to go? And I said, yeah. She said, all right. I give you my blessing.
So explain to us and everyone listening, what is infantry?
Infantry is the tip of the spear. We locate, close in, destroy the enemy. We had several things we had to accomplish out in Afghanistan, including finding HVIs, so high value individuals, people that are wanted, known terrorists. We'd have them on playing cards so we would remember them. And we'd go out and find them. We'd also meet with the local leaders, see what they wanted. And I'm actually working on a documentary right now called The Kids Don't Stand a Chance. I have all my, this is my first announcement too. I have all my department footage.
Exclusive.
Marines, yeah. And the documentary is called The Kids Don't Stand a Chance. Because we were the youngest unit to deploy like, around that time. And we were the first in this hostile area called Trekkinala. And it was known for having Taliban training camps, IEDs. And when we left, some of the higher ups told us that the kids don't stand a chance. Like, we're sending them to a death trap. There's no way they're going to get this done. And so we get there, and it was rough. It was rough. We flew out. I remember we were at a karaoke bar, myself and a couple of other squad leaders, and my lieutenant called. And I just knew something was up. And we were going to leave until like a month later. And he was like, yo, Bin Laden's dead. We're leaving tomorrow. And I'm like, what?
Whoa.
So we left. I think we got into Afghanistan 2 days, 3 days after Bin Laden had been assassinated. Mm. And when we got out there, Ramadan had just ended. Mm. So amped and ready to go. And so, it was insane. But at some point, we began to reach out to the kids in the community, to the village elders, and helping the populace out. And they, in turn, would give us a lot of information, people, help. So, yeah, the kids don't stand a chance. I think neither of these kids were going to stand a chance, but we worked together, and we actually ended up coming home the day before Christmas, alive and well. And, you know, with a lot of work that we did, and we had accomplished a lot. We caught some bad guys, and I think the units were very proud of us.
Yeah, I think the title speaks volumes because it's the kids, as far as you guys, the Marines being the youngest, but it's also the kids that you guys went to visit, and they're the ones who helped you, and they probably didn't stand a chance just as much as you guys didn't.
They did, and when they saw how much we cared, they would tell us stuff like, don't go down there, it's an ambush, like, you don't want to go down that road. Like, they would give us information. Pretty cold lightener, you know, they put IEDs in the ground. And so a child was going to a well and lost his leg in an IED. And the mother brought him over in a wheelbarrow. And my buddy Cole, who's a corpsman, just leaped into action. And he was a kid. Like, the night before, he just got into a fight with another Marine because we were still adolescents. Tensions were on high. Mm. And didn't know if we were going to come home or not. And so, like, this documentary shows the rawness of deployment, the adolescence. We're still kids. We still think about things that are going on in the world. We're thinking about the mall and these shoes and stuff, but then there's a war going on. So you gotta let that leave. So you see all that in this documentary.
Yeah. It's still kids being put in and to make men and adult decisions. Yeah, it's crazy.
Mind you, you know, we're still highly trained. We were the most trained unit, you know. Mm-hmm. We're called Bad Company. And we had trained up before that for months and months and months. And because my leaders were hard on me, I had to show mad love to my Marines and was hard on them. But we also made sure that we showed them so much love and appreciation, and we were a family. And because we were all we're kids. I think I was, when I deployed, I must have been 23, 24, one of the oldest out there.
Wow. That's crazy. And the Marines start recruiting very young. I remember that I was 17 when a recruiter found me. A Marine recruiter found me.
What?
Yeah, and I was in my freshman year of college, and... Why?
Because nothing. Keep going.
17.
No.
No, go ahead.
No, I'm just thinking about you in the Marine.
You don't see this jacket. See? Look. You don't see this jacket?
I see you.
Thank you. Take me serious. Okay.
A good Marine.
But he, and it was the opposite. Your recruiter said he didn't need you, and they said that they needed me because I was a black female. And I don't know, but I'm assuming that there's not a lot of African-American black females in the Marines, at least at that time. This was 2000.
Yeah, that time, you're right. Exactly. That's the thing. It's like, you're spot on, Davina, because around that time, they were taking in everybody, right? Like, you miss drug tests, or taking you in. You got priors, or taking you in. Whatever.
Facts.
It was huge because, you know, it was open. And then, again, like I said, 9/11 happened and things began to change.
Yeah. And when I went to Baltimore, took the test, I started training, like doing pull-ups, all that stuff. Like every day I was out there on the track running, doing pull-ups, like stacked. Okay. I was ready to go. And my dad was like, excuse me? I was supposed to leave the day before Mother's Day. And then my dad went down to, he had talked to some friends, and then the Air Force came out after me because I scored high on my test. But I had already swore in for the Marines and everything.
Wow.
Sworn.
That?
Yeah, I swore in. I had my whole packet. I still have my, I should have brought it. I had my packet at home, that little pink paper. I had my, the dog tags that they give you, you know.
Dang, I did not know that.
Yeah, all of that. And my dad was like, bro, you have asthma. Where are you going?
That would have been a really short trip.
Yeah, well, they, you know, and I told my recruiter, I said, you know, I have on the paper, they ask you about your medical history.
Yeah.
And I put on there that I have asthma, and I told him, and he said, well, just, you know, does it flare up all the time? I said, no. And he said, well, you don't have to really put it down. You'll be okay. And my dad was like, oh, hell nah.
Nah, that's the thing. And it's, and you know, boot camp is crazy. So, like, you're going to have flare-ups all the time.
Yep.
And there's no way off of Paris Island but graduation.
That is not true. That's true. What they tell you.
It's true. It's true.
That's, you know, not. Yeah. Well, wait, know? Wait. Do they, wait. Graduation meaning like they.
Basic
gotta
training?
You got to graduate off that island. Ain't no way off that island. I've seen people that were on Paris Island for maybe a year and a half. You know, they got medically, they got hurt. And then, because here's the thing. They put so much money into you. From that time you leave for MEPS from Baltimore until you get to boot camp, they don't care. If you break your leg on purpose, I've seen people jump off stairways, break their legs, smash their fibula. They're going to put you in the hospital on that base until you recover, and they're going to start from day one again. If you can't qualify with your weapon, you do all that training, you go back to day one, or you go back to the first day of weapon qualification. Oh. You fail any written exams or tests, back to day one. There's only one way off that island. I mean, there are people there that got there when they were 30, and they didn't leave until they were 33. And I'm telling that's the truth. We call them the grand old men of the Marine Corps because they're stuck on that island. The only way off that island is graduation.
But if... Oh, wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, or like I said, I've seen it all, but boot camp, it could be a scary place. And, you know, I had people, like, would get up at night and just bang on the doors and be like, I'm going to take my life if you don't let me off of here. And they just send you to the chaplain until, you know, you feel better about yourself, and that's it.
Well,
that's
not the chaplain.
Not say, until you feel better about yourself.
Yeah. Graduation is your only way off. I think I said too much, though.
Why?
Huh?
Why?
He's supposed to be telling what's going on on the island.
I mean, he's out now. He's out.
I am out now. What are they going to do? But yeah, that's only one way off that island. And it's funny. It's actually funny because one of my best friends from boot camp, Ruben Cabrera, shout out. He's a graffiti artist now. I met him in boot camp, and we've been friends all these years. But he was in Miami last night for Art Basel. And so we called and reached out, and we were just talking about boot camp last night, about the madness we saw, the things that happened. Like, it got real. It got real at night. Like, one person messes up, people squirm up, you know? Yeah. And, like, cleaning up blood with the mouth, it's crazy.
So
it's
for
crazy.
Somebody who was scared to tell their mother that they were leaving, how do you not have fear or, like, live in fear? Like, what are you feeling on a day-to-day basis while being at boot camp? Like, you're... That's like an insane asylum. Like, seriously, people banging on the walls. Just imagine walking down the street, somebody throwing themselves down the steps, and you're supposed to say, okay, cool.
I know, that's it. Because they realize, like, I didn't want this. I didn't know it was going to be like this. I didn't know that I'd have my mental fortitude pushed every night, my body pushed every night. I'd get into fights with, you know, drill instructors are really messing up out there. But they're doing it to break you down so that way you lose that individualism and you got to work together. I mean, it's clockwork. When you read little posts and threads before you go to boot camp because you're so nervous, you're like, what am I experiencing? If people tell you, like, first you're going to go there and they're going to break you down individually. They're going to make you hate each other, turn on each other, and then they're going to make you realize that the only way through this is to work together. It's smarter than the drill instructors. They love it when you're smarter than them. They love it when they see that cohesion come together. When they say, who did this? And everyone goes, I did it. Everyone puts their hand up. I did it. We're all going to get punished for it. That's what they want. Because that's, you don't ever lose that, you know, unification.
Oh, like, them wasn't on Major Payne?
Major Payne, actually, I think he was a Marine, but he was a Marine. But he taught at the boys, like, military academy. But he wasn't repeating that.
He was, but then it wasn't it one. The whole movie was about, like, that working together. And when somebody by the end, it was like when someone got in trouble or somebody did something, it was like, I did it.
Yeah, that's it, man. That's it.
My name is Jimmy. It's like
my name is Jimmy. Which is a great. Unfortunately, Orlando Brown is. A little crackish now, but he was a really young kid in that movie. I think he played Tiger. So many good stars in there.
It was funny, great movie. So in the military, they have this whole thing, or they did had this whole thing called "Don't Ask, Don't Tell," right? And explain "Don't Ask, Don't Tell."
So bear with me. Okay, because there's my experience and there's what happened, and then there's those gray areas in between. And when I say gray areas, I mean the government was kind of wrong for this. Okay, so coincidentally, being an openly queer black man, gay black man.
Quick question: openly
what's queer.
So that, and on top of that, were you openly gay/queer in? When you went into the military?
No. I mean, I knew that I was my entire life. It sounds sad. I just knew I'd have to put on a back burner because...
I feel like that's what most people have to do. What do you think that had to do with?
You just... You want to... You want to make sure that there's no reason why you don't get the job or you don't get the, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want anyone to be off put by it because it's such a masculine driven branch of service, especially the infantry. But to my surprise, after I came out, I had some of my own Marines begin to come out in the infantry. And it was just this change of pace, and we began to see it. Funny enough, to answer the other question again, the thing about Don't Ask, Don't Tell was you knew who was gay in the military, right? Because there's some people that just, you know it, you see it. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, for me, people are shocked when I tell them I'm gay. They're like, whoa, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, I don't want to lie. You know, I know. Because I have this masculine energy, but I still maintain this inner feminine energy inside because I know it's important to have. You got to have that sun energy, the moon energy, and you got to keep it. No one to use it, no one to keep it.
And we all have this, the both inside of us. It's just, I wish people would understand that y'all aren't just men because you're masculine. Like, we both have.
Or because
it's
you just, have a penis.
Yeah, like, it's like, it plays. Like, it really does play, but continue. But,
and honestly, it was a group of drag queens I met when I was in the military that taught me that. And it's a craziest story, but I'll go back a little bit. During 9/11, there were several linguists that were in the military that were let go because they were found out they were gay. Mm. And who's to say, we don't know, but if those linguists were working, we probably would have been able to intercept some sort of conversation about 9/11 happening. That's where we put this whole story.
Wow. That's deep.
That's really, there's actually a whole documentary about it. And so coincidentally, the same gay kid who wanted to join after 9/11 was following the suit of these people that were just let go of their jobs. I'll find the name of the documentary for you.
Please do.
Please.
And it starts with the beginning. But let's be honest, like, how long have gay men been in the military, in the Navy, in the Army, you know, for so many years?
How long have men existed? Like, what?
That's it. And you know, like, when sometimes the Navy ships back in the 50s and 60s, they'd port, you know, men were going to places where traditionally they wouldn't go, and they were experiencing life in a different manner, and it was okay, but not okay. So, again, it was a huge jump from when I got in there, because I was kind of on that fence of like, all right, no one's ever going to know, that's fine, but I still had to deal with my coming out. I never really had a coming out. I never really started being me until 30.
Told you that, yeah.
I never really got to it. I wish I did, but At what was going to be the risk? At what risk was I going to come out? What was I going to lose? Who was I going to lose? Because, you know, as we progressed so much, but in 2006 to 2008, 9, 10, when was it okay to be gay for us?
Hmm.
You know? It was, you wanted to be, but you didn't want to be ostracized. And you didn't want people to look at you differently. And you didn't want to feel like, especially coming from an African household, you know, you're going to be X, Y, Z, which is, it was, I didn't get any of that, which I was very lucky to, but I knew that.
That's a blessing.
Absolutely. Nothing but love for my parents, nothing but love for my family. Some people knew. Some people called it. but you know, it's just, it's all those different experiences, you know. I remember, I don't know if AD remembers this, but, and this is just a side note, but your mom, Auntie Gladys, took me to my very first wrestling match. And that was WrestleMania. And
probably with Ian. I feel like I do remember. I think it was for his birthday. I do remember that.
Kids, and I remember we had spent the night there before, and then, you know, we're kind of play wrestling. And I think somebody had, you know, one of the kids, it wasn't Ian, it was one of the kids that, you know, used to live in a neighborhood, had said the word faggot. And the way Ian hopped in and was like, you can't say that. Don't say that. For a kid, was like my first time hearing, like, what's a faggot? And Ian told me, and I was like, oh, that's me, you know, but he didn't know that. And But again, it's how you're raised, you know what I mean? And we do raise men to respect women a lot more. We should be. We don't really raise men to respect other gay men. And so that's,
or just other men in general.
There you go.
Because you're a man first.
Wow.
I think the sexuality is just a part of you.
That's it. There you go. There you go. I love the way you said that. The man first in me. And so, yeah, I mean, I've lost some friends along the way, I feel like, due to just my sexuality, my choices in life.
And that is so weird to me. Like, that is the weirdest thing.
But I've gained a lot more. I've gained way more in my community and some that aren't in my community. And I will say this, that I the outpour of the Marines that said, I love you, bro. I will follow you to war anytime. This doesn't change a thing about you.
That's amazing.
I never had a single Marine be like, whoa, you know, it's been all love because
they got to see the man first. And that's what I feel like I appreciate about that process. They got to see who you were before they thought about what you did behind closed doors. You know what I'm saying? And I can appreciate that.
No, it doesn't matter anymore. You're like, oh, you are, but you're an amazing individual. Mm-hmm. For me and help save my life in this situation, and can't let that go because of someone's sexuality, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming to a podcast about nothing. Like, right, you just summed it all up. This was amazing. Right. Yeah, so
how cool. We love it. Yeah. So what you eating for dinner?
So when you say it was the way that you're raised, like, do you think that the way you were raised played any part with you hiding who you were? Not just coming from, let's say you come from an African family, a very Christian family. Do you think any of that played a part in you saying, I know that I am, but I'm going to go ahead and marry this girl anyway?
No. I think you're pushed into a narrative. I think you're pushed into a narrative that makes you feel like you aren't. That's the thing, is nobody's saying that you're not allowed to be. But what all you hear is you can't be. Like, I the three experiences that put me off was, one, going to Christian camp and being baited into telling them that I was, like, being so emotional from the, I was like, yo, to my youth pastor, I'm gay. And he was like, he just broke me down. You know what I mean? And I was like, okay.
What do you mean?
Like, it wasn't.
If you care to elaborate on that.
I would have to say it was more or less like, you're going to hell. Like, there's nowhere. You know? And I felt like, as a kid, that scared me. Like, I don't want to go to hell. I mean, I still have strong faith in God. I wouldn't be here. You know, that's why I think that I become so fearless, is because I only had a 50% chance of being in this world. And then I went to war and came home alive from that. You know, in every experience in my life, I've almost drowned several times. Like,
Jesus.
You have no choice but to be fearless when you know that God's got you.
Yeah.
So my faith in Him is still strong. It doesn't change a single thing. But I think for certain Christians, it does. For certain Christians, they say, well, we're going to ignore this part of the Bible, but the part that says you can't be gay, we're going to really emphasize that. Because if we don't.
That's most. Yeah.
We don't want that rubbing off on our family or our kids. That's never going to be okay. And I'm saying to myself, how many things in the Bible aren't okay? You know, people don't even enforce anymore because they say, well, let's just focus on this. Or the Ten Commandments. Everyone's got their own interpretation of it. Me personally, I just stay close with God. As close as I can. I read the New Testament, and I keep him in my heart. I know he's got me, and I know the same God that made me made the people that don't like me.
It's like, you know what? That happened in the Old Testament. That's old. Why are you bringing up O's?
That's old.
Why are you bringing up O-ish? I don't know if I'm allowed to say shit when talking about the Bible, but why are you bringing up O-ish? Okay.
The Old Testament, we're stoning our children, throwing rocks at our kids because they were acting up.
Right. No, we on to the new. Okay. We on to the New
with
Testament.
The bells and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing, that God is God. He's a God of love, and He made me, and He doesn't make mistakes.
Sorry, too many snaps.
Right.
Yeah, most comfortable I've been in my life. This is the most happy I've been in my life. I've been with my boyfriend for 6 years. We've been through ups and downs. He's never left my side. And I don't see how anybody can be mad at that.
Oh, can I plan a wedding?
You may plan a wedding.
Y'all heard it.
She said, look, it's recorded.
It's recorded. It's on. Because I've been trying to plan people's weddings for I don't know how long, but nobody would let me plan a wedding. It's the only time that I feel that glitter and, you know, unicorn colors are acceptable.
See, already, she's fired.
What? You see that? He got them good teeth. That's the marine teeth. Y'all saw that? He can open his mouth wide. I ain't seen that in a long time. People don't do this and laugh.
No, you know that.
People don't do this and laugh. That's that good dental government insurance. I know that's right. Look, he just smiling.
All the happiest marine I know.
Right.
I ain't even gonna lie to you.
You gotta be, like I said, you gotta know war to know this much peace. You gotta be going through depression, you gotta lose people, you gotta feel alone, and then you gotta finally come out of it stronger than you can be with this positive attitude. Affirmations every day, telling yourself that everything's gonna be all right in life. You know, you don't support nothing no more once you've been to hell. You feel like, you know, there's nothing you can't handle. You're gonna be all right. You're gonna come out of it like a phoenix. And I try to maintain a positive attitude 24 hours a day.
Somebody been watching X-Men talking about Phoenix. So when did you first?
Is her name Jean Grey?
Well, it was, but then she turned into the Phoenix.
Family, that's why.
You know what? Oh, Gray. Mm. So when did you first realize, like, yo, I'm gay? And you said when you went to the wrestling match when you were a kid, but when did you, because, okay, let's get into it. You were married.
I was married to, it's not a big deal to talk about. Her name was Jessica, and we were extremely close. We were very, very close. And, she had a son at a very young age. And I dated Jess more or less to show people that I was straight. I'm straight because at the time it was, everyone's like, yo, we're in high school. We're not really dating anybody. And I started to freak out. But
I feel like that's when a lot of people had their turning point. I literally just explained that situation to you.
I was deep into the gay culture. I mean, I was like...
Even in high school?
Yeah, I had my own car. I would drive so far. I would drive to Baltimore and, like, PA. I would get in my Nissan Sentra and drive to Pennsylvania to go to gay bars. That way, there was no chance of anybody running. Not even a shot. Wow. And then as I got older, at college, I'd pull back and go to D.C. more, and then I'd get closer to home, and by the skin of my teeth, sometimes I'd see someone that I know and I just dip out the club. When Jess and I met, she knew and she was aware of it. We just wanted to take care of her son together. And he would get my benefits had I done that.
Wait. So she knew?
Yeah, she did.
Wow.
She knew. She knew right away. So we tried to date. Like, we tried to make it work. She really liked me. And I think at one point I was like, look, I got to know this about me. I can't do this because, you know, X, Y, Z. And then we just stayed super close. And she was actually, her baby father went to Watkins Mill. It's just a deadbeat guy.
What's his name?
I love him.
Wait.
Deadbeat.
Oh, well, it was younger than me. Not too much younger.
Wait, can I say his name on here?
Yeah.
Hell no, baby shit.
His name was Freddie, but he called me.
Oh, why his name gotta be Freddie?
I was just thinking about that line. Let me not say nothing.
My bad, but go ahead.
He called me before I left for the Marines and was like, I mean, I don't have no problem with another man raising my son. Do what you gotta do. And I spent every day with this kid, you know, like Jessica and I hung out every single day, and I just got so attached to him that I felt like, so what can I do to help? And she was young, and she was working 3 or 4 jobs. And I said, all right, well, look, I don't want to just go down there and be held down by myself. Let me move down there, bring Jordan down there, we put him in a good school. And then because I was in, I would get all the benefits, and we get through health care, and we got housing and all that other stuff. And then I went on my first appointment, and she cleaned out my bed.
Hold on, time out.
Whoa.
We can't really hear you, and I don't want to miss any of this.
This is the tea. Scoot up.
How's this? Is that better?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is the tea. I went on my first appointment, and I basically, because I had put Jordan in a nice school, and, you know, we were just living together, and then I deployed, and she moved back home. without even telling me. And she had access to my Navy Federal account. And I remember, like, during that first deployment, even with bills being paid, I think I had like $25,000-$26,000 in my account. And so I went to go purchase something for myself, and my card declined. I'm like, what? And so I go to check the balance, and my entire checking account of all that hard work on deployment, that combat hazard pay, that she had just cleaned it out. And so, like,
I'm about to cry.
I called, and I'm threatening her overseas on the phone, like, you know what I mean? When I hit that, that great temper, it's like, there's no going back from there.
I know.
she called them, and like she played them my voicemail, and they were like, look, you can't be threatening your wife. And I'm like, she's not my wife. But I couldn't say.
Wow.
So like the lieutenant of the ship was like, I'm not going to fry you for the threats. I get it. I had a friend that had it worse. You know what I mean? I was able to get some money from savings, but she spent a lot of money. And so from there, I cut her off. But just recently, we began talking again. She wanted to check up on me.
Oh,
she
said, forgiveness. Oh, my God.
That's not God. That's the God in him.
Right.
That's the God in you. Because I would cut that bitch. Right. Yeah. Just kidding.
He's 17 years old. And he goes to high school, Gaithersburg High School. He still asks about me. He remembers me being without pleasure in his life.
Wow.
In a really bad place. And her therapist said, you need to make amends with this guy who raised your kid.
Wow.
So that still, you know, what you did was wrong. And it's how you can all move past this. You can help him with his behavior issues. If you get to know someone, that helps raise him. And so, yeah, she's been every other month or so, she'll check in on me. I'll check in on her. And, you know, the guy that she was with, Carver, took over, but she's doing a lot better. She's got, I think, two other kids now. But, yeah, she's in a good place, and so am I. And I think that chapter is closed forever. But
God really raised you, bro.
You know what?
Okay. My tears are like filling up right here, because like the aggression that I feel in my chest, like I can't get past it. My bank account was clear. Are you kidding me?
I know. And I was so close to coming home. And I called her and I said, you couldn't just wait. You couldn't wait. Even if you wanted to just split the money and go your separate ways.
Wow.
She was talking to too many Marine wives. She knew what she could get there with.
Oh.
You're entitled to this when you deploy. Do you know you can do this? So, you know, I went ahead and just filed in for the divorce, because the only reason we did that on paper was so that we could take care of her son. So once that happened, I hadn't spoken to her in like years, and then randomly she was like, hey, I just want to say, 16, 17, about to be a senior in high school, still thinks about you, still remembers you, he appreciates what you've done. So, and I met him when he was 2.5.
Come close to the microphone.
Yep. 2.5 is when I met him.
Wow. I can honestly say, from the outside looking in, how somebody would have perceived that situation, it looks bad. You get what I'm saying? Like, you knowing what you know about yourself and from the outside looking in. But I commend you on your mindset at that young age to take somebody's child and know that about yourself and raise them for the betterment of somebody else. That is commendable beyond measure.
And not only that.
My goodness.
I don't know if you said it to other people. You and I talk pretty regularly, often, and we talk about a lot of stuff. Like, you've never said anything bad about this lady.
No.
We just went our separate ways.
Yeah. It's not in me anymore. I'm so at peace now that I would never even want to wish anything bad on her. And I wish everybody that I meet just peace, happiness, and blessings. Even if they've done me the worst in the world. I get my satisfaction from knowing that I can give the gift of wishing someone peace, happiness.
But I don't think you give yourself enough credit, because yes, you're at peace now, but even then, like,
you put out peace.
The fact that you never even said anything, I think the peace is being okay with saying your truth. It's your peace. You know, you were so, even with the coming out thing. Like, you coming out, you were at war with yourself, but trying to make sure everyone else was at peace with you. And that was how you didn't come out and say anything about her, how you didn't tell your mom, you know, you were going to be deployed until the day before. Always thinking about other people. The actual peace within is what's allowing you to actually tell your story now.
That's true. That is very true. No, that makes a lot of sense to me. That's actually very, I mean, that just sizzles in my spirit.
Hey, little sizzle on your spirit. Hey, I'm for it. No, seriously though, that's deep. Like, I honestly, like, that's really deep, because that was the last thing I heard. You remember timelines, you being here, being there, moving around and stuff like that. I feel like it happens to a bunch of family members. After a certain age, everybody goes through this finding themselves phase, so you don't really hear from people. Then so when I pop up or when we see each other, it's different accolades. Oh, okay, he graduated. Oh, he's in the military. Oh, now he's married. Oh, he's in Miami. Oh, you know what I'm saying? So I'm only hearing about one or two things. That's why I said, from the outside looking in, it's like, well, if you knew this and what's going on, how did this happen? But hearing the clarity in that story, I got a whole different level of respect for you, bro.
I can't even lie.
I appreciate that. No, I think everyone has, there's always the truth, the story being told, and the one we make up in our heads, right?
That's the truth.
So I think that's really the important one, is finding which one is going to make you a better person. And once you begin to get that out of your system, you begin to heal. You know, I'm not going to say that I wasn't emotionally scarred by certain things that happened. I was, like, to the point where I felt like, what options do I have in life anymore but to keep on going with this chip on my shoulder? But then the healing process began to start when I was able to be honest with myself, with others, with my story, with my family, because that clicked within when I started to fall in love with acting. I realized that everybody would say, oh, he used to be a good liar, so he's going to be a good actor. When acting is being truthful in imaginary circumstances, you've got to be honest. So if I ever did a scene where my wife left me, all I got to think about is what really happened, and I'll emotionally get there. But if I'm blocking that part of my life, it's going to look like I'm acting. And then that's why we see the movie where, like, where Will Smith is like,
oh my gosh.
You know?
This made me just have a thought process, because we talk about this all the time, not to go in on Beyonce, but it's almost why Beyonce might not be a good actress, because we always say she doesn't give us anything. You get what I'm saying? Like, she doesn't.
She's still lying.
She's still lying. She's still trying to be perfect.
Hey, let me tell y'all something. First of all, we're not big enough to be cancer. So, second of all.
No, I'm just saying, like, I feel like in certain, like, when she's singing, she's in her element. You can tell Dreamgirls was amazing for her, you know? But I'm just thinking about, like, the little roles that I've heard about in certain things, while we always get, like, this. We need more.
That's why she's able to be honest in her music.
Yeah, because acting wasn't like her having to really think about herself in certain situations was probably like far-fetched. Like, no, I'm Beyonce. I don't go through things.
Absolutely. I'm like, and it falls back down to it. Like, you got to imagine, this girl has been singing since she was a kid, and that's what she's really good at. And so right after singing came the persona, and she built that up.
Yeah.
To be someone else, like, she was in that movie. What was that movie with Idris Elba?
Obsessed. That's the first movie that I'm thinking about. That's why I started saying that. Like,
I couldn't stop seeing Beyonce, and I'm like, well, she's not a bad actress. It's just, every time
she's not giving herself.
She doesn't really change who she is to fit the role. And again, I'm not bad mouthing Beyonce at all, because she's one of the most talented people in the world. But I watch everyone closely now as an actor. You know what I mean? Every actor has an objective and a desire. In every movie there's always an objective and a desire. The Dark Knight, the Joker, and X-Men.
Oh my gosh, amazing.
So many of them. And when those objectives and desires begin to intertwine, they create this beautiful story. When we know how it's going to end, we just don't know how it's going
to happen to get to the end. That's true.
How far is this person going for their objective? And so I think sometimes when you've been broke and you've been hungry and you really read a script where you're like, oh, I know my objective and this has happened to me before, you don't even have to pretend. You just say the word and it comes out naturally.
Yeah.
That's what life is.
That's what life is. That's why it made so much sense to me. I was like, oh, okay. Living in your truth is so important, because if you're not, then you're missing out on life and the experiences life has to give.
You know what? You should cast me.
Oh, God.
I am.
You should cast me. Real.
I do have a question, though, because I'm guessing real. You got you filed for divorce and got a divorce while you were still active in the Marines, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay, so with that being said, and you knowing your status, you knowing that you identify as a gay man, what was that transition like for you, especially when you were going off and trying to explain, but you couldn't really say, like, stop playing with me. She's not really my wife. She knows what it is, but I can't really say. Like, what was that like for you until the moment that they passed you being able to be openly, or was it?
Did they?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it just, you didn't know how it would affect your job. You didn't know how it was going to affect your Marines. A lot of them looked up to me. You know, I'll be honest with you. And it didn't change things, but I didn't want them to feel like, who is this guy now? Who has he been? Because if you don't come off in something like the military and tell someone right away, and they feel like you held a secret from them, it hurts them a little.
They question everything.
We're brothers. That's it. We're brothers. But when I one more tea. I'm gonna drop this tea real quick.
Okay, for the tea.
Make sure you close to the mic. Make sure so we can get it on.
Yeah, bring
it in.
Let me get this on the airwaves.
There we go.
I used to, when I got to I can't believe I'm telling this. When I got to North Carolina, at some point, I just had this, like, I was sitting down with a bunch of my friends, and I'm like, you know what? I got to get back into the scene, right? I miss it. Like, I'm going to miss out on love or experiences. Like, all my friends are in college getting to do what they want to do. And this is my college, you know, and it's not saying I should have been having fun in the Marines because I worked so hard. We all did. So I go to this club and it's this guy comes up to me. His name is Jordan Marlowe. And he's like, at the time,
that's too much information.
I know too much. I'm super jacked. He comes up to me. He's like, you should be a dancer. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, you should dance. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, I mean, you should go dance. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Why not? So he gives me this like blue pair of undies and a cock ring. Right. And he's like, oh, slide that on. And keep his name out next. And like, again, I just met this guy, but I didn't need the money. I don't know why I did it. I just was like, you know what? This is your chance to be free, bro. Just do it. Don't shoot dick on that stage. Enjoy yourself. And literally, he's like, what do you want me to call you? And I'm like, I don't know. He goes, where are you from? I go, London. He goes, now introducing Big Ben. And this music starts playing, and I do this routine. I couldn't get enough of it. I kept going back every week. We traveled all across North Carolina. I would leave work. I would leave formation on Friday. Friday night, we'd get in the car with myself and other go-go dancers. Spend the night at, like, these lesbians' house who own bars, and we'd do their variety show. And it was the funnest time of my life because I met these drag queens that taught me about titles, how to take care of myself, how to, you know, not get HIV and AIDS, like some of their friends passed away from, how to have sex responsibly. Like, they just raised me in this community. And they knew I was a Marine. They never said it, but they, you know, it was kind of unspoken. There was another Marine dancing with us too. I know he was a Marine to this day. So that was my experience. And then one day, I would come home with a bunch of cash, like in a red bag.
Coming
and
back with ones, like, where are you coming from?
If I went to the bank and around the base, somebody would be like, where'd you get all this money from? Like, aren't you, you know, I'm the same Marine that goes to that bank. So I just kept all the cash in like a wall locker. And so my buddies went, I came home and my bag was sitting open with all the cash in there, all the thongs and cock rings. My buddies were like, where the fuck have you been? It was like, I got to show you guys. I can't tell you. And they came with me and they had a fucking great time. And they
were
Oh, that's fun. I can't even lie.
Yeah, they're like, this is great. There's so many hot girls here, but the guys here, like, they're just buying us free drinks all night. Like, I love it. And I was like, yo, this is my other family. I want you to meet them. And like, I ended up getting out of the military around that time. And I remember just driving off base, just sobbing profusely. I think it was a mixture of just me being done with 4 years of the military and then me finally being like, I get it now. I can go be free. I can go do this every weekend if I wanted to, every day if I wanted to. without the fear of being judged, because I just got accepted by my friends, the culture, you know, and then the LGBTQI community that I felt so much love from, that kept me from actually just feeling like I had to kill myself when I got out because of all the depression and anxiety. I felt like I didn't have to live up to anyone's expectations but mine.
Yeah, I don't get PTSD vibes from you.
No, I do.
I do. They were heavy when I got back. It was bad when I got back. Yeah. My second deployment, it was really bad. It was bad. I was depressed. I was a walking time bomb. I think you remember me.
It wasn't outward.
Yeah.
It wasn't outward. It wasn't like, you could tell by his actions, like in the club all the time, throwing bottles. And it was almost like, although you had come out to this community, you still weren't really out.
I wasn't.
Have you ever had like a moment that you like, I'm telling everybody?
It wasn't until my favorite brother-in-law, Tyler, that I really feel that you were comfortable, and my kid's favorite uncle, Tyler. Hey, Tyler, I just want to know how much I love and appreciate you. And I'm going to call you for free medical advice during this, lockdown time. But hey, it is what it is. But I don't think it was until him that you actually became really, really comfortable with you.
He saved my life, dude. And this is a true story. Tali will tell you that he literally saved my life. I was just going through it, right? And I would be at the clubs, I'd get the bottles and the limousines just to mask, to feel something. I didn't feel anything no more when I got back from that deployment. You know, everybody saw it. Nobody was home. My friends would be like, yo, my friends that were civilians that I grew up with all my life were like, something's not right with you, bro. No one's home. You look empty, you look dark, you're starting to sound dark. You know, you talk a lot about death. And I started thinking about it a lot. I'm thinking to myself, like, all right, well, I gotta numb this pain somehow. And so the bottles and the clubs and everything that I can do to self-destruct, because at the time I felt like I was on top of the world, I was doing that. And then it just hit me where it was like serotonin depleted, miserable, and PTSD. And I think the day before, I was like, you know, let me just get a quick coffee, you know, and I'm thinking about like what I can take to kind of end this. I don't want to say my life. I just want to say the pain. Would it be probably way more than I should have taken? Yeah, it probably would have landed me in an emergency room, but I just wanted to numb everything inside of me. And then this bright-eyed, intelligent guy walks in there, and we got the same name on our Starbucks cup, which is Ty. And we just spoke and we got deep on a level of the whole day. And I remember he just kept telling me, you look like you need to sleep. And I did. And so we got drinks the next day. We met up at Union Jack's and we hit it off. We talked every day. And because he had known where I was at mentally, he never left me alone. Even when I wanted to be, even when I wake up and be like,
God is gonna send bless people they bless us.
He just wouldn't stop. He wouldn't stop, and he just kept saying how much he was gonna be like in my life. And then 6 years later, here we are, both happy, both well, both kind of sane, both so. but we don't forget that, and I don't ever let him forget that, and that's why I treat him the way I do, because it could have ended badly, it could have ended differently. But yeah, it's PTSD is real.
I didn't know it was that bad, but I knew that you were obviously struggling with something that, because it was like,
if it's outward, I feel like it got to be bad. Like if it's starting to show on the outside and people can see it, only imagine how much they try to hold it together.
Yeah, and I didn't necessarily see it on the outside. It's just like I didn't see it when we talked. I didn't see it when I saw you. And I think we talk a lot more now than we did then. But it was like Tyway in the club and Tyway popping bottles and Tyway done did this. He done bought out the tables and it was multiple tables. And
that's almost not unheard of from people coming back from the military. So people might almost deem it as normal.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Actually, you know what's crazy is BT, you know, he had told me a lot that he he had warned me. Actually, BT was there for me, dude. I remember at some point I checked myself into the VA, like after like, I was just flying to another place to party. And also, again, because I wasn't fully out, the further I get away, the more I can party, right? So it's like, I would go to Vegas some weekends and just blow money. And I come back and then check myself into the VA for mental health. And, you know, they would put me on these pills and that would really zombie me out because the pills would give me thoughts of suicide. So I think he randomly one day came over and he just grabbed the pills, flushed them, was like, stop taking these right now.
That's right. BT is military as well, right?
Yeah, BT was Army. He was Special Forces. He went to Kosovo. And, you know, I was the only Black Marine on my deployment. Mm. Only Black Marine on my deployment. And BT was as well, too. It didn't change how we were treated. But, you know, you're not raised the same as everyone else. Like, you know what I mean? Some people have different circumstances, especially if you're Liberian. Like, you're raised a different way.
Yeah.
So when you come home, the expectations are a little bit different. Sometimes the weight of the world is on your shoulders. Not to help anyone out, but just to make sure you're okay. And the more you act if you're okay, the more you try to cover it up. Yeah. So I got what BT was telling me. It's okay, you know, you already made your mistakes. I just need you to stop taking these pills because if you don't, you're going to end up how I almost ended up. So I was really lucky to have that as well, too.
And this, if you're not comfortable asking this question.
Answering
this question, and that's fine. Do you believe that the medication that the VA puts you on is not so that, obviously, I wouldn't want them to, go ahead, commit suicide, obviously.
Yeah.
But do you think it's to basically put you in this trance,
sedate you
so that, one, you can't come back and have conversations about it. One, you can't, you know, remember all the things that you were going through. Do you think it's not necessarily to help you, but to give you what it gave you, basically?
Yeah. I mean,
that makes any sense.
No, it does. That's a really good question. It feels like it felt like it felt like a short fix. I've lost way too many Marines to suicide, like a lot of Marines to suicide, right? And it just bothers me that
were they all getting help?
Enough questions. Yeah, I mean, as far as veterans alone, we lose 22 a day.
Jesus. That's where the 22 push-ups came from.
Yeah, that's why I do the 22 push-ups every single day. Just to remind me, it gets my mental health going. It makes me not take the day for granted. If I start my day with those 22 push-ups, ain't nothing in the day I can't do. So, but it's an alarming rate. And the ones that I used to talk to every day before they did it, they never reached out. And that's what scares me. It's because it's like, were you that numb to the world where you just couldn't even pick up the phone? And I mean, I get it because some days I'd lay in that bed and I'd think about killing myself. I just didn't have the strength to do it because of the medication. You know what I mean? So it's like, I think it's a quick fix that people weren't asking enough questions about. The VA has gotten better. I will say that. The VA has gotten a lot better. But if you were in around my time and before, you had to deal with some people that just would be like, here, take this bag of pills, you know, and they literally would call them a cocktail. The VA cocktails, because it's a brown bag and just pills in there. You know what I mean? So, and you don't know where you're taking.
Do they provide therapists? Do they provide any type of mental?
Their mental health facilities have gotten way better because the numbers were staggering. And the Obama administration was like, what's going on here with our veterans? You know, Obama was really concerned about that rate. So he started to look more into VA and other administrations looked into the VA and they started to do better with it.
Look at that. Go vote. while other administrations are trying to cut funding. Look, we're not telling you who to vote for. We're just telling you to vote. You heard him. You heard him. But what did the Obama administration do?
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's it. And that's the thing, too. And I'll tell you this story about the Obama administration real quick. When I was at boot camp, you got to be watched 24 hours a day, right? Mm-hmm. Because you always have weapons on you. Mm-hmm. And so, Marines in the past have offed themselves right there in the barracks. They didn't want to be there no more. So you have to have someone constantly roving around. So you do like 2-hour increments between everyone. They wake you up. Hey, you got to do watch. You put on your clothes. You get a little red flashlight. You just stand there. And sometimes there's higher up officers that come in and check on you. Make sure the drill instructors aren't beating you to death. There's no blood. You know, there's nothing that's going to make the Marine Corps look bad. So they have a whole wall of chain of command with all these photos on that, right? And the very top of the photo was President Bush. And so, they have the photos with the names. They walk in, you can salute them and say, good morning, and you can know their rank because the picture's right there, the door's right there. I remember I had watched at midnight, and I forgot what month it was, but I know it was midnight for sure, and I had my red flashlight and the door open, and these two officers walk in, and I salute them. I'm like, good morning, gentlemen, you know? And they just look at me, they ignore me, they take Bush's photo out, and they put Obama's photo in the wall, and they leave, and I just broke down crying. I broke down crying, because any other time, I wouldn't have gotten that news until somebody wrote me a letter. Mm. But if he's on the chain of command, he had to go up there. That changed the game for me. That made everything different. From that day on, I was like, I'm gonna fuck this military up. I'm gonna do what I got to do to come out here on top. Because the whole time I'm looking at older white men on this wall, and that's who I'm busting my ass for. Which is nothing wrong with that. Some of them are great men, great Marines. But just seeing Obama's face on that wall in boot camp changed the narrative for me. I was first in everything I did. I didn't fuck around. I got meritoriously promoted from Lance Corporal. I got Combat Corporal in combat. That picture stuck in my mind forever because that was it. That was it. That was I didn't even get to vote.
Yeah. Oh shit!
You guys were away.
Yeah, I didn't even get to vote. I remember you and Lizzie went to the inauguration.
But that is crazy.
We weren't together.
Yeah,
that's crazy that this person that under chain of command that I don't even get to do an absentee.
I know.
In the military, I'm just thinking about it. Like, I don't even know who I'm I'm serving the country, but like my chain of command, I don't even get to vote him in.
And that's what the whole issue was with this one. But that's a conversation for another day.
I just talked about that because he was like, it could be me, it could be my brain cells that I've been lost over the years. But I don't remember ever voting when I was in. I don't remember being a part of it.
Wow, seriously?
I don't remember getting the chance to vote. We might have even sent it to the field. Like, coincidentally, we had a field op around that same time. And I was a resident of the state of North Carolina. I never remember voting once when I was in the military.
Wow, and look at that. And he still served 2 terms.
That's crazy, though. And I never really thought, because I feel like Obama was such like a victory, of course, for black people and won. But I feel like you look at like the kids more so when people think about motivation. You know, it's like, oh, my God, the future. You get to see somebody black because we're at Clinton, Bush, you know. But I didn't even think about the effect of
the military,
like especially being a black man in the military and realizing your chain of command is Bush, this person, that person, all the way down to Washington. And it's like, wow, finally.
Yeah. You know? But honestly,
face that looks like me. And that was the best part about that was they even ask you when you get to boot camp, who has a father or a mother that's a 4-star general, 3-star general or colonel, you know, and not anybody like me raise their hand. You know what I mean? But they ask you so they can know how to treat you, because if their parents come, you know, they find out you've been mistreated or mishandled, which we were, then they got the power to do something about it.
And wow. So
my president had the power to do something about it. And oh, sorry, all it takes is an active letter to Congress. That's the only thing that can bring down somebody in the military. is an active letter to Congress. Like, when these mothers started to write about their kids having suicide, committing suicide, that's when Congress was like, we got to change this thing. We got to do this, take care of our veterans. Those letters are really powerful. So, you know, if you have someone in the military you love and they're dealing with it, if you know that they need help, write your senators. Those letters change lives. They really do.
Please say that again. Please say that again, because I think people need to know what they can do to be active, to help.
Absolutely. Write those senators. It's important. They can change things overnight. You know, certain things happen on deployment where we were just like, we're not doing it. We're not doing it. And it was us against some of the higher-ups, and it got to the point where I think a wife, just one wife that got a phone call, was like, I'm writing my senator, and it changed the next day. Mm. You don't play around. You have that ability to do so. Just do it. Write them just to say, you know, I heard on the podcast that we're still losing 22 Marines a day, veterans a day. What can we do about this? You know, make these issues be
heard. That's valuable information.
Absolutely. We're so quiet about things until they happen to someone we know, and then we say, let me go pass a bill.
Yeah.
Yeah, or we just don't know how to go about them. Because I didn't even think to, you know, I feel like if anybody's in that situation, you want to go to where the person is to find out and cuss them out on the base. Like, they ain't going to do nothing.
Yeah.
You know? So thank you for that information. That was great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It helps. It helps a lot. And I think people should write them anyway. Like, Tyler just... He was unhappy about certain things in Miami. Like, they've cut a lot of the film incentives. And so I was kind of like, oh, it'll come back eventually. And because they cut film incentives, we went from shooting some great movies in Miami, like The Birdcage and Scarface and Bad Boys.
Hold on. I'm sorry to interrupt you. You said, oh, no, Birdcage. Is that the one from Netflix?
Not Bird Box, girl.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I was thinking, I knew she was going, but not Bird Box.
I'm still confused about that movie. I'm just next episode we're doing with blindfolds on.
She gets irritating. That's funny.
Great movie. But yeah, that's it. So he writes and he taught me how to write. And who to find out, who to talk to. And I think that research, we got to start doing more of that, because he was, I ain't gonna lie, he was on the forefront of this Black Lives Matter fight. And when I was...
Yes, he was.
Anymore, he was like, look, I got you. You've been fighting this your whole life. Rest.
That's dope right there.
Yeah.
You mourn for George Floyd, you mourn for Breonna Taylor, and you let me fight.
White coats for Black Lives Matter. I remember that.
I was so proud of him. So,
yeah.
That's a goodness to have in your life. He come out a little bit before me to his parents formally, you know, his letter and stuff. So he's really helped me just kind of find all the places in my life where I need to communicate to people and be like, oh yeah, by the way, you may not have known this about me, but you know, I'm a gay man and this is who I'm with. Like, we're out, we're public, we're out on social media. But some people just didn't get that phone call. They didn't get that. And it's tough. It's really hard. It's hard because...
Some people always feel like they're owed that as well. I will say, like, it's not even going to be a simple, like, post or anything. Because to me, that's... If you see me with somebody in a post, that's it. That's my out right there. You know, like, I don't feel like I need to explain too much. But, you know, you're going to have those people who are like, no, I don't know nothing about... Nothing being true until I get a phone call. Like, okay. Right.
That's kind of like an invite.
Yeah.
Those people who,
like,
need an invite.
Like, if you didn't directly send it to me, then it's not, I'm not invited. Like, okay.
The thing is I guess my excuse was it was nobody's business, but that's what I was telling myself in fear of.
It ain't nobody's business.
It's really not anybody's business.
That's true. And like I said, AD said it best, like, sometimes when you show people who you are and then it comes up in conversation, it don't change much.
Yeah. But if you lead with that, they're going to...
Absolutely. And it sucks because we come from a city like D.C. where see people actually what your job is, or if you're married, or if your orientation is, so they can know how much respect to give you. That's it.
Yeah. I think that's it.
I thought I was about to say any major city. Yeah. I feel like that's what I've experienced in any major city. It's about what you do, what you moving and shaking. Like, why can't be regular in the house? Just yeah, liking to do regular stuff.
I feel like Atlanta got the most down low gays. So
I've been intertwined, not entangled, but I've definitely been on the scene. Oh. No. I personally haven't been in entanglements, but that being in Atlanta, because what I feel like I experienced in DC was just gay. Like, that's what I always say. People were just gay. Like, there was nothing more, nothing less. They Facts. Weren't flamboyant. They weren't out being Nicki Minaj one day and regular being their regular selves the next day. They were just gay. You know what I'm saying? It was literally a just gay. Like, that was it.
We're going to take a quick intermission.
All right.
Just like 10 minutes. I'm going to turn off the recording. And then we'll get back to it in like 10 minutes.
Okay, so I can fill up my drink.
Let me get one too. I think I need one after this conversation.
Yeah, this has literally been one of my favorite conversations today, and I can't even lie.
Yeah.
I can't even lie. And we were supposed to do this, 2 years ago?
Yeah, facts.
2 years ago when we were down there for Thanksgiving.
The timing would have been so wrong because I still would have been.
Oh, and that was last year.
This Tawai probably. So I'm glad that.
That Tawai keep coming up. I'm telling you, yeah, you need to let him. And I'm just kidding.
All right. We'll be back after these short messages. I need to make a commercial.
Okay. Perfect. And 1, 2, 3.
That is our marker.
Oh, we did good on that one.
See, I know how to clap. Hey. Oh, we really do, so we can write on it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It just helps you to sync your sound and your footage a lot better. So you know what take goes with what take. And you see this in front of the.
Oh, so that's not really. It's meant to show people what's going on.
Yes and no. More for like when you edit it, but also so that way you can get your sound going and then you know what take it is and what scene it is. So when you go to edit your footage, you don't have to look through where we stopped to go to the bathroom. You'll see this again, and you'll see take two.
Oh, that's right. I thought they were just like action.
Oh my gosh! We need to go to his class.
I honestly think you will be really good at improv classes, but I tell you that all the time. I think you'll be really good at improv classes.
But I don't know how to stop laughing.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's it. Sometimes that makes people laugh even more. You know what I mean? So it just, you got this improv. Yes, and follow up with whatever the truth is in that moment. And blunt people are the best at improv because they don't care what comes out of their mouth. And so you have to struggle to find the words. Just say it, you know, like, who's at my door? And then you just say, oh, I've been sleeping with your husband for 2 weeks, and they're like, what?
Oh, my gosh.
You have to give him circumstances and be like, oh, you've been sleeping with him? And it turns into these fun scenes where I get out of control until they say cut, and everyone's just laughing.
Okay, let's do one real quick.
Oh, God. I can't. Okay. You go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. I appreciate you for coming today. We just looked at your job resume, and it looks like you're very qualified here to work at Papa John's.
Okay, I mean, I eat pizza all the time. I like pepperoni. I mean, I really wouldn't like help anybody if they wanted just cheese because I think it's stupid.
I think cheese is stupid too. Now, I did notice here you did put you want to change the name from Papa John's to Mama Davina's. I don't think we can do that.
Why not?
The name just doesn't sound right.
But it sounds fine. It sounds fine. Like if I was to like, so wait, is improv? What is improv? Like, am I just supposed to say whatever out my mouth?
Yeah, improv is accepted to give them circumstances, and you can say like, oh no, Mama Davina is my stripper name. You got that wrong. It's the wrong. And so now we can change.
Oh my gosh, I got a stripper name, y'all. Y'all heard that, right?
You never seen those threads on Twitter when people like start and they're like finish the story.
Well, I mean, you have to be on Twitter to see it.
Oh.
Oh, you're not on Twitter?
I mean, I am, but I have a name on Twitter.
I want to ask this question, though, for you, both of you.
Oh, we got a question.
On episode 59 and how far you've come, what was the secret to the success of the show?
Cheers. I'm just
playing. Left or right?
Right. This is the secret to success.
There's a secret and a sauce. One with ice, one with not.
That's improv, Davina. That's how you kill improv right there.
No,
that's it.
Wait, your alkaline water diet looking kind of high in that cup.
And which one? This cup? Or this one?
No, seriously, I can honestly say for me, is consistency. And other people believing you more than you believing in yourself that keep you going. Like, it's fun. You know, but you kind of find purpose in it when you have people like, no, you could really do this. You're like, oh, for real? Let me see. You know, like, let me try for that. But for the most part, it's like putting it in your mind that it has to get done and staying consistent. Nothing else, nothing more.
Were there any moments of doubt at all during that time?
Every day. Yeah. Every day. Like, every single day. It's like in your mind, you know it's going to get done. Like, we know we're good at this part of it, like recording. Everything else, putting it out there, getting people to talk about it, getting people to watch, getting people to interview with us, that's all doubt for us. Not every day, you know, but it's like between the both of us, it's like I see where it goes back and forth, but we're good at this part. Yeah. Getting in the room and talking shit, we're great.
I think we're even good at like putting it out. We were very consistent with that. I can say shout out to your brother because Yudu is the one who really, really, really pushes us to like see more than just recording and putting it out every Wednesday. He's like, yo, nah, like y'all got something special and we can really do this thing. And like, oh, you know what? Y'all can be bigger than Joe Rogan.
Absolutely.
And it's like, oh, I think that all the time. He was like, yeah, but you have to say it. And you have to say it to really, like, make it happen. And I'm like, okay.
I've never had anything bigger than myself that, well, bigger than what I felt like I was capable of that I didn't plan for. So the fact that we planned to do this but didn't have a definitive plan, end goal, we're making up everything as we go, I feel like that's the doubt. Mm. But having that voice of like y'all can really do this. That's somebody who's, you know, been to the point where they've set goals higher than themselves and reached them. But I've never done that, so I can't really say like, okay, yeah, whatever.
You know, your brother's different.
Definitely, he's done it, so he's able to look back so quietly, calmly, and tell us like, y'all can really do it if y'all stop bullshitting. So when he says it so calmly, you're like, okay, this must be able to, you know, he's not one of those like, let's go, gonna hype you up type of thing. It's like, y'all playing. And okay, let me see. Let me get my shit together because it's so calmly, you know, it's like, it's so calm and cool. You know, I'm not gonna say motivational speakers. I feel like there's like but you're trained to be rowdy, you know what I'm saying? But like, he has such this calming spirit, like, I mean, I've done it, if you want to do it, just listen to what I'm saying type. And then almost like, are you trying to be smart? Like, are you trying to talk shit? Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's almost how it feels. But you start to believe it, you pull fuel from him, you know. That's what it is for me.
I just never forget waking up every morning and you having a huge something in the basement to put something together. We were all living in Jump Drive. It was like, it didn't matter if it was equipment he got secondhand that he had to hook up to this to make it work, or if it was calendars with Obama on it. He just was really consistent with everything he did, and it was so big in his mind that you believe how big it was, and then it blew up, and you're like, oh, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Be that big. And I got to say, I get that from him, my dad, my mom, too, but him and my dad have this.
Yes.
It's got to be bigger on a bigger scale. It's got to go. Because you're greater than that. We come from greatness. So, you know, all of us as human beings, we have this internal mechanism that says, you've been hurt here, you've been embarrassed before, don't do it because you're going to feel that way you did for yourself out there. It's natural. And you just do not have those inhibitors. You know what I mean? He's like, just go. But then when you speak to him, he's like the shyest person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So big. And it's like, so when he says something like, oh, I'm gonna start a recording studio. Like, is this real calm like that? You're like, no, mm-hmm. sound like that. And then within a month, it's up and running. And they're like, what?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, that's how it was for me with Ian. We were all living in the house, right? All of us just chilling. I'm thinking all of us are cool and poor, not even really trying to talk shit. But when it was time for him to leave, it was like, yeah, yo, I'm moving out next week. Going where? Oh, and then he tells us about what he's been doing in his basement. When you see him, all he's doing in the basement, blasting music, chilling on the computer. He has his setup. So I feel like I got plotted against. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, but, what?
But it's one of those things where it's like, when somebody turns something on in their mind, there's no stopping.
Yeah.
There's no stopping. There's nothing you can do. And it's one of those things that I feel like a lot of times they can't even explain. They mm-hmm. just have to do and show you, you know. And I learned that by being next to this person and seeing like, okay, everything is not meant to be spoken out loud and explained and make sense to people. Just do it and people will follow suit. Do it. And people mm-hmm. will come through. Mm-hmm. Just do what you're supposed to do, and people will always fall in line. That's one thing I learned from the book.
It's like speaking greatness into existence, and that's what you did with all of us at the studio and the studio.
Well, I wasn't around him in the studio on an everyday basis, but it's like it didn't seem like he spoke greatness into existence out loud. It was more so the belief that exuded from him, that when it came time to speak about it, it was almost like it was happening. From y'all explaining to me, getting close with you guys about the studio over the last couple of years, I didn't know half of the shit y'all went through.
Oh, yeah.
You get what I'm saying? I didn't know half of the shit that you went to, but every time you talk to you, it was, got a studio, it's up and running, it's press coming through, everything is cool. It's just a go.
Yeah,
I can't explain it. Just go, and people will fall in suit.
He spoke it out loud to us inside the studio. That was what was important to him.
Well, y'all were the operation. That makes sense.
That we were great, you know, and we had to be great in order for people to see the greatness on the outside. And that's what, you know, he made everybody. There's no one who came through that studio, whether it was artists, engineers, family members, any of that, that didn't come through and actually worked with us for an extended period of time, that didn't leave, and they weren't greater or had the potential to be greater than what they actually were when they came in.
So true. Yeah. So true. It's inspiring. That's so dope. Honestly, he's like that. It's insane. Like,
it's infectious.
That's it. The building could be burning and you just chilling in the chair. Like,
yeah, I'm like, y'all better go get that hose. Good. It's going to burn.
Yeah, we're going to be all right. Yeah, yeah, just, yeah.
You believe him because he's so calm about it.
And it actually happens. Like, it's more than just like speaking and people believing and following you. I think that's what was that festival with
Fire House Festival with Ja Rule and the dude who in jail.
That's messed up that no one ever no one ever remembers that white boy's name that actually started all this shit. But everybody want to speak about Ja Rule. Like, who gives a fuck about what Ja Rule saying? Or who gives a fuck about what Ja Rule think? Ja Rule was just an innocent bystander, but this white boy who was the mastermind, don't nobody know his goddamn name.
Plotting. He was plotting the whole time, barring millions of dollars of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's messed up. Poor Ja. You know what? Hey. Hey, Ja, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that this white man did this to you. And I can't lie.
Ja Rule said it's coming back, though.
Dude, he need to stop. I'm saying I'm sorry for you. You need to quit while you're ahead, okay? And don't get me wrong. I love white men, especially when they old, but...
Ooh.
They turn boxy. They definitely turn boxy. Anderson Cooper, I watched CNN the most because of that man.
You know what?
Nah, he look good though.
Who?
Sorry.
So does Sean Connery.
You love him.
I love me some Sean Connery.
That's her special.
Sean Connery from, he's the original.
He's old.
James Bond. No, he passed this year.
Oh, rest in peace.
You know what? Yeah, I didn't even know who he was. Don't be fake. Don't act like that.
I'm just saying, rest in peace, but I knew he was older. How old was he, B?
It doesn't even matter. He was sexy.
Take a shot for him. I'm with it.
Shot.
That is funny. What?
So, Ty, we covered a lot.
This has been lit. I can't even lie.
Yeah, this has definitely been amazing.
I appreciate the honesty. I do have closing questions, I guess they would say. Not necessarily encouraging people to go to the Marines, to the Army, or be in any forces, but what advice would you give to somebody who identifies as a gay man and wants to pursue anything, like going after, like what do you feel like they need to, you know, process in their minds, or what do you feel like is the strongest driving force to be able to be comfortable? And what you feel like, if you can give advice to your younger self to be more comfortable in your situation, what would you tell yourself?
That's a great question. And no BS. I wake up and I do three things. I pray, I meditate, and then I try to connect with my younger self, i.e. meaning forgive him for anything he's done and let him know it's okay, it was okay to be scared all those years. Because I was scared, and because I was so scared, other people got hurt. You know, I got hurt. There were so many scars from me being younger that I never healed yet. So that conversation always starts with me just saying how much I love him. I love you. I love you. You're loved. You have a great family. My mom and dad have been so amazing in my life. Without a doubt. If I wanted to go DJ, they let me do it. I wanted to join the Marines, they let me do it. If I want to be an actor, they support me in it. They've never told me I couldn't do something, so I never had any wall or fence in my brain that said that it wouldn't be possible. So I would tell my younger self to just continue with that. Don't be scared to tell the truth, and don't be scared to be honest, because at the end of the day, you'll get what you want by being honest.
I say that all the time. Mm-hmm. I say it all the time. You will get what you want if you're honest. Even if your honesty doesn't come out and bring the best situations, you will be free from any lies that you have to tell in the future.
Absolutely. And then any advice I give for just anyone, gay, straight, bisexual, black, white, transgender, I say find your purpose. And when you find your purpose, go with it without any time restraints or restrictions. For some reason, there's a stigma that if you want to create or be in the arts, or you don't have the traditional degree to work that job that makes a lot of money, that you're not smart and capable of doing certain things. You are all that. You can be all that. And just because there's doubt that people think that, you know, you don't have the ability to create something better than yourself, know that you can. Know that it doesn't stop with out the hard work, the homework, the consistency, the true love to yourself. You need all of that in order to make anything happen, you know, to be honest with you. And it's a scary world out there. Be proud of who we are, you know. We chant it, we say it loud, we hear it, we're queer, and we have nothing to fear, you know. I think we're...
I like that.
Absolutely. We're such a strong community now, and the ally support has been insane.
Yeah.
Going back to WrestleMania, Ian just being like, yo, don't say that word. You know, we've had allies all our lives, but now they're stronger with us and we're better in numbers. So when we move around in this world, no, we're not alone. We still got a lot of work to do. We're still losing a lot of transgender black women.
That's true.
A lot of young black men kill themselves. We're still having a lot of issues that need to be fixed with our allies. And just like Tyler said, it's okay to rest. If you've been gay, you've been fighting your whole life, getting beat up and picked on, having to hide who you are, rest and let your allies fight for you. They'll do a good job fighting.
If you let them. That's true. The whole fight ain't your own.
You gotta let them. And I think we got a lot of ground to cover. And like I said, that's my bigger purpose. Is I'm going to use my platform to write movies, to give back, to help the community. Washington, D.C. has one of the highest rates of homeless LGBTQI youths because they get kicked out of their homes.
And wow.
Wow.
Yeah. With nowhere to go. And it's a huge problem because when they get kicked out, then they fall into drugs and prostitution and whatever it can to get by, or they're just killed in the street because, you know, for some reason, black men in D.C., they sleep with these transgender girls and then they find out, or they don't
get upset. I hear about that all the time.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that.
Okay, so I'm sorry. See, he did the same thing I did last episode.
What?
With Patience. He got up and y'all was like, does she know that we're recording?
But he's the guest though.
Oh, he's the guest.
You supposed to know what's going on. He's supposed to know what's going on. You're trying to get up and go take breaks.
No. So, okay. Yes. Yeah, so.
And honestly, it's great having family like you all that honestly use your platform to have me on and talk about these things, because if it's one person that listens and are like, "Whoa, let me change the way I see life."
That's all it's about.
Bigger purpose again, you just accomplished more than anything else in this world. Before, like I said, I wanted the cars and the big house, and I wanted to know what Hollywood can get me. And I got to Hollywood, and I was like, I don't think I want any of this. I just want to make a difference, because Hollywood or home, you know who needs to help more, right? So when you go back to DC and you're hearing about these issues, Hollywood's fine, they're gonna be fine, they've always been fine.
Yeah.
My community, my people, my color.
I was about to say, there's so many different layers to you that you can really fight for besides just fighting for your own materials and what you want for yourself.
Absolutely. And then losing Chadwick Boseman was like, all right.
That was sad.
Fought that fight. And so it's not over yet. And now he's created millions of Chadwicks and millions of, of actors that are going to go out there and start doing the right thing through their work, and their script, and their philanthropy. And that's how the world gets better little by little. These small steps and small conversations that turn to big ones changes the world.
So real quick, name, what's the name of the documentary, again, that you're writing?
The Kids Don't Stand a Chance?
Kids yes. Don't Stand a Chance. That's what we were just asking.
I really want to, the first documentary I've ever produced and put together myself, again, all 6 months of deployment. My Marines and myself wore GoPros, and I collected all that footage and those raw interviews and all that stuff to make you feel emotions. And then I took my exact soundtrack from deployment that I used, and I put that in the whole movie. So you get to feel the music that I used to wake up to. Like every morning was Kanye West, Good Morning, as you look over in Afghanistan, which is the Garden of Eden, and the sun's coming up, and think to yourself, I may not come home today. Let me enjoy this sunrise. And you feel it, the tension in it, and it's a moving documentary. I promise people will love it.
Take your time with it, because I think it's really gonna really gonna help not just Marines, you know, kids, that because that's what they are, kids that's going into Marines, but I think just kids all over the world.
Absolutely, there's hope. There's a hope. If we can work together, we can solve so many issues.
Yeah,
you know, our objective wasn't to go there to make friends with kids, but we knew if we did that, we could stand a chance. All of us, all the kids over there and the kids that were deploying there. And due to COVID, it's hard to get some Marines out for interviews, but I would love for us to reunite on camera again, because we haven't seen each other in a couple of years.
Ooh.
And it's really nice to see them again and bring everyone in, of course, sit down interview. So I would definitely take my time with it.
And you're talking about the kids over in Afghanistan, or like the Marines, or both?
Again, I don't know if we'd ever see those kids again.
Yeah.
Saddest part of the ending to the story is you don't know who made it or who ended up becoming Taliban or who ended up becoming, extremists, or who ended up changing the city. I'll leave on this real quick story is we met with this village elder who they're respected, and he actually had planned several terrorist attacks, including 9/11. And then his own son got murdered. And so he was sick of it. He was like, this ain't, I want to help these kids. And so when we met with him, just wanted a way for the kids to get to school every day. And so he would send him, he wanted some Marines out there to make sure it happened. And that alone, he was so thankful for, that his kids can get an education, because it would keep them away from the jihad.
Being outside, yeah.
That's, that's a beauty in coming together and having a conversation. The same guy I was probably mad at in 2005, before I left thinking him, he did 9/11. This is the guy I've been looking for. This is the guy that needs us to pay for it. But we worked in a way where he was extremely sorry for his contributions to it. It wasn't large, but his job was to recruit. And so he wanted to change that. He wanted to change the town he grew up in. And all I could think about was, man, what if this was my dad? So that fast, forgiveness was made, and that fast, peace was in a country that didn't happen before.
Damn, that's... What if this was my dad? Damn, that's deep.
Absolutely.
My dad would have still been talking shit, honestly.
see, that's why.
Like, honestly,
See, that's why we always on the brink of getting canceled, you know? That's why we always...
I'm just saying, he would have, but you know, I understand. To have your own mindset in a situation when you are almost like trained to kill or trained to go after somebody is commendable too. Like, if you're told you're supposed to do something when you see somebody, you know what I'm saying? And to be like, you know what? I'm still a human. Like, come on.
And they're still a human. Yeah. That's
everybody falls victim to bad situations, honestly.
Bombs were dropped in that country. Innocent people were killed too. It's not like, you know, I know we suffered so bad and we're still hurting from 9/11.
Yeah.
I mean, how many troops have we lost and how many people on their side have been lost? And like, you know, it just, if someone had compassion on that plane that day, it may not have hit the towers. So I think what's more important than having rounds in your weapon is compassion in your heart, because you can win wars with hearts and hearts. So I think you really got to focus on that and say, we got to put all this aside to figure out how we can create peace for a better future, because the kids are going to be the ones living in it. Us old folks, you know, that deployed and the ones that are over in Afghanistan, they've lived their lives to the fullest. Maybe not in the right way, but now let's focus on another generation that can help fix all the problems we have.
Yeah, this is really, really dope. Really dope.
That was amazing.
Yeah. And we really, really appreciate you. Please, there was another documentary that you spoke about, and you're going to send us the name to that. Yes. And then on top of that, if you have any type of nonprofits or anything that actually gives back to one of the veterans, children of veterans, wives of veterans, anything like that, send it to us so we can actually put it in here and people can, with the episode, and people can actually support. On top of that, you also spoke about, you know, the LGBTQ community. So quick question, and I'm not trying to be funny. Are there more letters added to that I missed?
It's QIA, which I'm still,
told us that.
No, that's a really great question, and I'm so glad you asked that, because
QIA.
QIA have been added, so it's LGBTQIA plus, because I think it's plus is like...
Oh my gosh, I'm plus. Can I be the plus?
You can be the plus. You add value to it, but there's so many. There's gender fluid, non-binary. There's so many. You know, some people just say, I fall in love with anyone. I fall in love with souls. You know what I mean? So there's so many spectrums on this now, because before it was just LG, and then I think that was it, right?
Yeah. What is a queer?
Yeah, because you said you're a queer man.
So I'll give you the definition of queer, and then I'll give you what my definition of queer is.
Because somebody calls my best friend a queer.
Are the both of you queer?
Tyler and I?
Uh-huh.
Gay. I'm gonna give you the definition. It's an umbrella term for sexual gender minorities who are not heterosexual or not cisgender, originally meaning strange or peculiar. Queer came to be used against those of the same sex desired relationship in the 19th century. So I take it on as, when I say I'm a queer man, I'm saying that's the derogatory term used against me that I'm now embracing.
Queer.
Yes, because it was one of the words that, between that and faggot, used to hurt me the most. Not anymore so much as faggot, but the word queer did. So you can always use that if someone identifies as queer, they identify as maybe not heterosexual, maybe not homosexual, maybe a bit of both. That's just their realm of where they fall. Mm. For me, if I say a queer black man, I mean, I have embraced that term of who I am as a gay. I mean, because we've now taken it and used that for an umbrella for who you like and who you love. So,
like nigga.
There you go. That's how I take it on.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's whenever I say queer, I'm just saying, you know, we're queer, we're here, and we have no fear. That was what we used to chant during the Harvey Milk movement and yell and scream at the top of our lungs to be proud about. But you can say you're gay.
Yeah, because every time I hear queer, people almost like relate it to just being weird. Like it's never just like a, like I never understood. That's why I'm like, I wanted to hear from somebody else, because I always hear queer, and it wasn't even in terms of like sexual. It was like, I used to hear it in school, like, oh, you're a queer, like, you're a weirdo. That's all. That was it.
What?
Yeah, like, you're queer.
Some of the younger generation, they use it to say, like the younger ones especially. The older generation used it for that same pride word, but I think it falls under more or less like, I'm not heterosexual, but I made out with guys, but I kiss girls sometimes, and I...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, like college queer... Kids. Oh, yeah. Queer boys. What is it? Queer eye for a straight guy?
Yeah.
Got it. Like, that's them. They're older. They're about my age, so they embrace the word. But that show's been around for many years, so... Mm-hmm. The documentary is called The Strange History of Don't Ask, Don't Tell on HBO. The Strange History.
Ooh, and it's on Primetime. Don't Ask The Strange History of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Okay.
Right. Okay. This is the first, let me tell you, this is the first episode that I haven't had any notes.
Is that good?
We don't, that's perfect.
Yeah.
You had all the info. We just had the questions.
Yeah.
That's what I like.
Yeah, we just like, I don't even know.
I'll drop the other links, and then hopefully when this COVID madness is over, I would love to talk to you guys about doing a possible 22-hour marathon for the 22 veterans who lose a day. We can talk to a couple of vets.
Ooh. 22-
but why does COVID have to be over?
You're right. It doesn't. You're right. It's
Let's
actually
do easier. It. What is the 22 minute?
Look at you making up shit.
22 minutes.
Yeah, well, let's do it. You don't even know what you're doing.
22-hour marathon. What is that?
Like a podcast marathon where it's music, where it's interviewing other veterans, where it's people calling in to raise money, where we can play drinking games. I think 22 hours.
We don't even have to wait. Let's go ahead and set it up now.
22 hours. Like, we supposed to be up for the whole time.
Let's go. What? Why are you going to sleep?
Can we rotate?
No. This is not watch hour, okay? He told us about watch hour. It's watch hour, right?
Watch, I feel like the show will be so lit because your energy never goes down, and I think that we can have so many...
Oh, my gosh. We can have... Oh, okay. So, okay, my mind just blew up. Okay, so we can have a DJ?
She was trying to party.
We can have... Okay, so wait. Is it appropriate to have a liquor? Like a...
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, we can
Didn't we get drunk?
Okay, so we can have... Because we're going to be in D.C. when we record this, so we can have... We can have liquor. We can have THC. That's the medical term. Okay, for the...
What, marijuana?
So imagine if we spotlighted that if the VA could switch out those pills with THC for those veterans, we could now be helping them a lot faster at a cheaper rate, because THC saved my life too. THC helped me out, balance my mind. I use it.
Does CBD do anything?
It does. It does, depending on like sometimes I get random panic attacks, which is kind of weird.
With CBD?
Yeah, CBD helps with panic attacks, but THC just takes away all my anxiety altogether, because your mind is still racing, thinking about war sometimes, randomly smelling something or hearing something and being like, fill your heart. So smoking helps a lot. And I think that we need to start passing bills where it's more accessible to veterans. The VA should be able to distribute that.
All right. So, okay. Yeah. So I like, let's do it. Like, not even like on any bullshit terms. I think like really we should do it. And
my jacket.
See, she got her jacket. So see, worried about the wrong shit. Okay.
Bring in a couple more amazing veterans with amazing stories to tell. We can bring in family members that we know, other people, and really talk about some of these issues and dance a little bit, and then have the number up to raise money, and let's see how we can get some help for some of these vets.
Raising awareness on something I didn't even know was a problem.
Yeah.
I'm aware.
Yeah.
I like it.
Sooner than later, because like you said, 22 a day, alarming rates. Especially like during this time, like COVID, people being locked in, and it's the veterans, it's the families, everybody is suffering. Thank God for the people who, people like you, a veteran that has family, you know, you have family surrounding you to keep you and great friends and all that stuff. But everybody doesn't have that, you know.
All right, you know, and they need it. And it, this could be a place where they could just go and say, I'm not alone. You know, we could have, I know there's actually a wounded warrior in D.C. who does stand-up comedy. Funny guy. He brings a service dog to all of his shows. I'm sure he'd love to do like a 30-minute, 15-minute, 10-minute stand-up. And he makes you laugh about it, but he also makes you very aware of it. So we can bring these people in and have a really good time with this.
Let's go.
Like that.
Let's go. I'm so ready. We'll definitely talk offline and actually set it up and get it ready. I'm excited. I'm so excited. You already know your brother's going to hear this interview and he's going to go like, okay, so.
I know. I already know how it's going to
work. I hope you're ready.
I am so ready. Like I said, I am ready. You all have been just such amazing hosts and I've seen what your show has done for people. And so I think that this particular group can use a laugh. We can use a good conversation. We can take some calls in. We can hear some real stories. We can be there for people.
A military talent show where people can don't. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Thank you for thinking we're suitable enough for the job. That sounds fun to me.
Good. And then we can even do like an episode of Hot Ones where we just go to the spicy food with a couple of people and we eat them and we have fun with it.
Oh, I did that Packy challenge. I almost killed myself. The one chip challenge.
Did it?
Yes, I did it. It tastes like pepper sauce on a chip, like smothered fried.
Yeah, the Liberian pepper.
It depends. Like I said, it tastes like it was a blue tortilla chip, and it didn't have any seasoning. Just imagine somebody's pepper sauce being hot with no seasoning, and it smeared all over the chip. It came in one package. I was fine when I ate the chip. Okay. Mm-hmm. It was the indigestion that I experienced 45 minutes later. I thought I was about to die.
Because I eat pepper sauce on my pizza.
I'm saying it.
But not the sweet kind. Y'all thinking about, ooh, the sweet green pepper stretch.
You gotta explain what sweet is.
Sweet meaning stretch with a lighter pepper, like a bell pepper, a green pepper, something like that. But when you're habanero, ghost peppers, chili peppers, and all the other stuff, and you don't add anything else. Just remember, just imagine that.
I thought sweet meant like, ooh, it's sweet, it's good.
I mean, sweet is good, but I'm thinking literally like stretched out from people not being able to handle the heat, and they usually stretch it with other types of mild
onions,
peppers.
Onions
and mild peppers. This wasn't stretched with anything. Okay, it wasn't sweet with anything. Okay,
it's funny because like even when I would drive around with my mom, she would tell us we're gonna get pepper. You think we get it from the store? No, with somebody baking it.
Somebody else. You better coat your hand.
Right. You can't touch your eyes. Wash your hands. Mm-mm.
Just the actual pepper. You touch the pepper and you. It's like. My nose is burning for hours.
Let's do it. I'm so excited. Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart from having
you. Thank you. And we really appreciate you for everything that you've done for this country. If nobody else tells you, we definitely appreciate.
That's for you guys, right? Y'all don't have any other salute, right?
No,
we okay.
That's a great salute, actually.
because I don't want to hit this. Put that down like that. Nah, but thank you for everything. Oh, straight.
Gotta keep it straight.
Over my eyebrow. But thank you so much for everything you've done for this country. Thank you for being open and honest. Thank you for the lives that you're going to save with your documentary, right, and everything that you're doing. And definitely let's connect on a deeper level for this 22-hour marathon that we're going to do. I think this is really, really dope. I got maybe 7 push-ups in me, so we can do...
That's on y'all. I might not be able to do the 22. I can probably do 22 seconds of silence in the morning. Like, I don't know about the push-up part. What? Pay homage.
Focus the 22 by the time we do the marathon.
Oh. Okay. Challenge.
Okay.
I'm down for it.
We got 2 weeks because we're doing this marathon quick.
Here she go.
She always does. Thank you so much. Hey, are you on social media?
Yeah, I'm on IG. And Ty London official, Ty London _official. And my Twitter, if you want to follow that, it's super gay, but it's Ty London _. Twitter's where I live.
Oh, I thought you were going to say your Twitter name is super gay. I'm like, whoa.
I thought so too. I was like, oh, what? Like,
wait, that's it?
Yo, you should go get that domain name, because that is amazing.
Somebody going to go to that.
Kind of dope though.
Super,
this should be a gay superhero.
Yes,
yeah,
super gay.
Oh.
See, now we're on.
Yeah.
You know what? You know what? You about to go ideas. Write another script. Thank you so much. Love you so much.
Love you, Tyler. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Give the whole family my love.
Will.
Will do.
I'll see you guys.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.